Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
How has America become the most unequal advanced country in the world, and what can we do about it? In the new book, The Great Divide, Unequal Societies and What We Can Do About Them, Joseph Stiglitz expands on the diagnosis he offered in his book, The Price of Inequality, and suggests ways to counter America's growing problem. With his blend of clarity and passion, Stiglitz argues that inequality is a choice, the cumulative result of unjust policies and misguided priorities. He is a Nobel Prize-winning economist and the best-selling author of The Price of Inequality, Free Fall and Globalization and Its Discontents. The new book is The Great Divide, Unequal Societies and What We Can Do About Them. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Joseph Stiglitz to the program this morning.
Nice
Thank you very
here.
Much for being with us. When you started thinking about this and this great divide, we think of a great divide in this country, but how did we come to this point of these unequal societies?
You might say step by step. It began even before the 1980s, but the real demarcation was around 1980. And we started stripping away regulations. We changed our tax code to favor speculation. We allowed the banks, the corporations, to shift money to the very top. And so, step by step, it happened. And over that period of 35 years, the striking thing is that our economy actually started growing more slowly, and we started growing apart.
You make the point very early on in the book, and it's an important point, obviously, which is that inequality is a choice, and we don't often look at it as that.
That's right. Other societies have made other choices. One of the things that I point out is that the same underlying economic forces are at play in all the countries of the world, all the advanced countries, and yet we have wound up not only with the highest level of inequality, but with the least level of equality of opportunity, so different from our self-perception. And one of the things I note in the book, one of the advantages I've had over the years is I've been able to travel around lots of different countries. And I've seen countries in very different situations. Countries that are much poorer that do a lot better for helping ordinary citizens.
Such as?
Well, Mauritius is a little island off the coast of Africa. Per capita income much, much lower than the United States. But it decided that it would use the limited income that it had to ensure that everybody had free college education. Everybody had access to a basic level of health care. And the young people and the very old could get free transportation so that they could have a life that worked better for them.
When it comes to leveling the playing field, and as you just pointed out, inequality is a choice. So we have to make choices in the future to level that playing field. Do we always know what those choices are and just decide not to make them, or sometimes are those choices not readily apparent?
It's much more of the latter, that the economy is very complex, and much of what has happened has been with the best of intentions, but with a lack of grounding in a real understanding of how the economy operates. So, for instance, there was a story that went around that if you could only deregulate the banking system, the financial sector, it would unleash enormous amount of power and the economy would grow faster. It didn't happen. What you did is you unleashed the banking sector and it made the economy more volatile. It enabled them to take advantage of poorer people, average Americans, and it meant that there was less money going into productive investments that would create more jobs. On the other hand, there were some other changes that were really pretty deliberate. We lowered tax rates on speculators below the tax rate we levy on people who work for a living. You know, that was clearly an agenda by the speculators to try to advantage themselves relative to the others. I don't think anybody really thought land speculation would create more land. That was a pretty clear example of a change in the rules and regulations, the tax structure, the way our economy functions, that was nothing more than taking money from ordinary citizens and giving it to the top.
Why do we keep going back to that then? I mean, if it's pretty well proven, as you make the case in the book, that this trickle down, that this austerity is not a successful response to the issue of inequality, why do we keep going back to it?
Well, that's another theme that I strike in the book, that there is a link between economic inequality and political inequality, especially in the United States, where campaign contributions play such an important role in our politics. So what has happened is that the people at the top have been able to use the political system to serve their own interest. It's also the case that, you know, just like corporations have found out how to sell their products, cigarette companies could tell American consumers that cigarettes were safe, and many, many believed it. The corporations have been able to sell many American citizens, voters, on the idea that lowering tax rates and deregulation would benefit everyone. They might get a smaller share of the pie, but the pie would be bigger and they would benefit. You know, it just hasn't happened that way. And as an economist, I can say, not a surprise.
The other point that you make is that our inequality, the inequality that we have, has a profound impact on the economies of other nations. We know this. And yet we still continue to go down the path. And I'm curious as to why you think that is, and why our economies are so inextricably linked that what we do affects those economies so profoundly.
Well, there are two reasons why what we do affects other economies. One, of course, is sometimes called our soft power, our example, and others have tried to imitate what we do. That's actually changing because more and more countries are realizing that the American form of the market economy is more volatile and isn't really serving most citizens. You know, with median income in the middle today lower than it was a quarter century ago, it's hardly an advertisement for saying, follow our example. So that's one. The other one is that we've been pushing trade agreements, we've been pushing changes in their regulations and the way they operate to make us more interconnected. And when I say we've been pushing, and again, it's an example of the 1%, the financial sector, the corporations. Right now, for instance, we're engaged in a very big debate about the new trade agreements. Those trade agreements are not going to create jobs. More likely than not, they may actually lose a little bit of employment and wages will go down somewhat. But what they're really trying to do is strip away the regulations that protect our environment, our workers, our health, and those in other countries. What they're really intended to do is to reduce competition against the big pharma, the big drug companies, from generics, and therefore raise the prices that ordinary consumers pay for the drugs, which have become such an important part of our health. So this is an example where special interests are driving what is going on globally.
You talk about the importance of investing in our human capital. Why is that a tough sell?
I think that, in principle, shouldn't be a tough sell. We know that those who are more educated do better and contribute. Productivity of our economy will go up. The real question here goes back to the growing inequality in our society. The people at the top who have so much political influence are sending their kids to private schools. And so their interest in public education has diminished. You know, when I went to a public school in Gary, Indiana, we had a first-rate education. And without that, I would not be where I am today. But unfortunately, the differences in the quality of education that ordinary Americans receive between what they receive and what the very top get in the best private schools or in the most expensive suburbs has increased. And that's really what it's about.
In looking at this great divide, were we ever on top of this? Were we ever at a point where we did it right, a golden age, if you will?
Well, there was a golden, in retrospect, it looked like a golden age of capitalism. In the period from the end of World War II to, say, 1980, it was the fastest period of our economy's growth. It was a period in which every group grew. We had shared prosperity, but those at the bottom grew faster than those at the top. So we were coming together. It was a period where we were much poorer than we are today, but after World War II, we said every person who had fought in the war, which was every able-bodied man, had the right to a free college education. Today, we say we can't even give a free community college education to the poor people. People are criticizing that, say it's beyond our means. And that's absolutely nonsense. And it goes back to the question you asked in the very beginning. It's a matter of choice. Clearly, we could afford it, but we've chosen not to. Even back in that period, what I call the Golden Age, when I was growing up in Gary, Indiana, you know, there was a lot of inequality. There was a lot of discrimination. So when I was growing up, I didn't view it as a Golden Age. But the irony is that things then were so much better than they are today.
So you write in the book about deregulation and tax breaks for wealthy individuals and corporations and tax cuts and how these have damaged our economy. They have done much harm to our economy, and yet we still go down this path. I'm curious as to where your optimism lies for the future.
Well, the limited optimism I have is based on the fact that there have been a couple of other instances in our history when we became very divided. The end of the 19th century, in the middle of the roaring 20s, and in both of those instances, we pulled back from the brink. In both of those instances, there was a strong political movement that said enough is enough. And the great inequality of the Gilded Age was followed by the progressive movement that passed laws against monopolies and began the protection of our environment. After the 20s, we had the Great Depression, partly related to the growing inequality. And then we passed social legislation that strengthened workers' rights, that protected workers, that provided retirement for our elderly, Social Security, really changed the face of America. So in both of those instances, we pulled back from the brink and started having a more equal society consistent with our values. So the real question now is, will we do that once again? And the fact that the issue of inequality has finally risen to the top of the political agenda makes me hopeful. The real question will be, though, what are the answers? What are the solutions? And what worries me is that a lot of people will be trying to pretend that they have solutions when all they're doing is just pushing a continuation of what we've been doing that has led to this growing inequality.
And this all comes out of, and I'm very interested that you use the words, the limited optimism that you have. And does that limited optimism, because I kept in reading the book, you can't get away from the fact that, okay, greed is always going to exist, and it's hard to combat that.
That's right. But the question is, can we channel ambition in ways to serve society rather than in destructive ways? And that was really about what regulation is supposed to do, and deregulation basically provided the opportunity for, say, those at the head of the banks to pursue their interests at the expense of our entire nation. And we saw the consequences. You know, and that's why after the stock market crash of 1929, we looked at what happened. We saw the same kind of greed and same kind of perversities, and we passed a set of regulations, and they actually worked. For 50 years, we didn't have any crisis. We didn't have these kinds of excesses, and our country grew faster and grew together. And then the battle started being fought again by those at the top, and they started winning. And they sold the country a bill of goods, I think. And now, 35 years later, we see the result of what you might call a grand experiment, And that grand experiment of deregulation, lowering the tax rates on the top, has not worked. And it's really time to change. And one of the points I try to raise is this is really an urgent issue, because what we are doing today is baking in the nature of our society 10, 15, 20, 35 years from now.
And that's a point that I want to close with, and that is because we keep on talking about how cyclical the economy is, but in reading the book, you really make the case that there is a point where it's too late.
That's right. And right now, what worries me is that we've reached a new height of economic inequality, but we've stripped away some of the protections in our political system. We've allowed corporations to give basically unlimited money and campaign contributions. We've actually enhanced their scope for influencing the political process, I would say distorting the political process, so that we are becoming a democracy, which is better described as $1, one vote, rather than one person, one vote. And that is what's going to make it more difficult to change now than it was, say, in the aftermath of the great stock market crash of 29.
The name of the book is The Great Divide, Unequal Societies and What We Can Do About Them. It is published by Norton. Dr. Joseph Stiglitz is a Nobel Prize-winning economist, the best-selling author of The Price of Inequality and Free Fall. He is a columnist for The New York Times and teaches at Columbia University. Dr. Joseph Stiglitz, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, The Great Divide, Unequal Societies and What We Can Do About Them. The book is published by Norton. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.